Yes, are you there?
Yes, my brother, how are you?
We are doing great today. This Sunday, I'm doing 6 hours, but I want to let the listening audience know that we have on the line Robert Roskine, and tell them a little bit about yourself, Robert.
Well, let's see. We've written a couple of books on Rastafari, Bob Marley, Jamaica. One book is Rasta Heart, A Journey into One Love. I'm hearing an echo. Is that a problem for your
own? Let me see if I can do something. You still hear it?
Yeah. So I'm hearing an echo, but if you can do it, that's much, well, it's about the same. Anyway, another book is called The Gathering of the Human.
What about now?
Much better.
Okay.
Still there, but not as loud.
Okay.
Anyway, my family and I in the last 4 years have taken 15 trips to Jamaica. Our goal was to seek out the basis of the one love that's, of course, you know, in modern conscious reggae music as well as Bob Marley's music. So we went way back into the hillbillies and villages of Jamaica seeking out
really knew one love, those that really were expressing the true one love that we believe is the heart of Rasta, it's the heart of Christianity, the heart of Judaism, it's the heart of all of us, it's who we are. So that gave birth to the two books, Rasta Heart and A Gathering of the Healers, and then we decided that we would begin to more or less put this one love out in a greater way in the Jamaican society. So we started a series of Gathering the Healers. Now, a healer to us is any elder, as other people would call them elders, peacemakers. It's those people that are old enough spiritually, not always physically, but old enough spiritually to know that love is what it's all about, that we are here to learn and teach love. So we are all potential healers. We are all potential elders. We just have to claim it. So we began to do a series of Gathering of the Healers concerts and reasonings in Jamaica, and to do that, we went out to the people in Jamaica said were their healers. So we went and we invited Luciano and Abby Jah and President Brown and Warrior King and Bushman and Mystic Revelation of Rastafari, these different One Love groups to join us. We've done now 45 concerts throughout the schools of Jamaica with these people. We also invited other well-known Jamaicans like Richie B., a talk show host, Antoinette Harton, who ran for prime minister, Aluna Samba, the tourist minister, Robert Russell, who does Reggae Sumfest. These are other, they're not singers, but they're other well-known Jamaicans who are healers. And they join us on stage during the evening. The biggest concert we had, Ras Charles, was on Bob Marley's birthday in downtown Kingston this year. And that night, 13 reggae artists join us, President Brown, Abby Jah, the people I've just mentioned, the different talk show hosts who are known for love joined us. And in Jamaica, they suspended TV and radio broadcast on almost every station and aired our five-hour concert. And so basically about 90% of the Jamaican population went on a journey into One Love, where everyone on that stage were people that they knew, and they knew had committed their life to bringing this message of One Love forward. So we've done now reggae concerts on the Hopi Indian Reservation and the Havasupai Indian Reservations in Arizona, because these two tribes are known for their One Love and they're big reggae fans. We just did a concert on the bottom of the Grand Canyon at the Havasupai tribe. It's the most remote area in the U.S. You cannot, it's the only village or town, Ras Charles, in the U.S. you can't drive to.
Wow.
You drive to the lip of the Grand Canyon on a remote area, and then you either have to walk 6 hours or helicopter in 10 minutes or take a horseback in 3 hours. And there's 700 Havasupai Indian living in a very remote village with beautiful, magnificent waterfalls and creeks. And we helicoptered in the reggae group Uproot, along with their equipment, took six helicopter trips to bring them in. We brought in Leonard Pelcher's people. He's the Native American activist. You still with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
He's the Native American activist who's been in jail 28 years. So we brought in Leonard Pelcher's people to speak to the Havasupai, and we brought in the Hopi elders, because the Hopi elders had just recently refused casino gambling on the reservation. After 300 Native American tribes said yes, the Hopi said no and turned their back on $28 million a year. So we brought all of those people into the bottom of the Grand Canyon. We put on this big reggae concert one night with this concept in mind. Their lore and legend has always said that they are the guardians of the Grand Canyon. Or the way they phrase it, they are the keepers of the heart of Mother Earth. Well, the American government and mining companies have recognized the Grand Canyon to be rich in resources, and they're wanting to go in and harvest the gold and the uranium and the water rights. You still with me?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening. You are very enlightening. I can't cut in on what you're saying because it's an education for me and an education for the listeners. So run
good.
It.
I heard the clicking noise. I didn't know.
Yeah,
if
I hear that clicking. It's probably on the phone, but
okay.
But we're still here.
Good. So, what we did that day is we said, look, this is a very uneducated tribe. There's no high school down there. Very few have been to high school. Most have never been to. No one in the tribe has been to college. There are no tribal accountants. There's no tribal lawyers. They're wonderful people, but they're not particularly sophisticated in the world's terms. So we went down there with this message to them, and that is, Jah sent you here to guard the heart of Mother Earth. Your legend says it. You've been here for thousands of years. Now people are coming who want you to vote on certain rights that you'll give them, mining rights, water rights, things like that.
Right.
Our advice to you is take no advice from anyone who doesn't know the sacred covenant that you have with the Creator to guard the Grand Canyon. If your tribal leaders, if the Bureau of Indian Affairs leaders, if the government leaders, the mining company executives come in here and want you to sign away rights, unless they know who you are spiritually, they don't know you. They only know you physically and economically. So if they don't understand the covenant that you have with the Creator to guard the most beautiful place in the U.S., maybe the world, if they don't understand that covenant, then they're like young children, like your younger brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
They're not
mm-hmm.
fully awakened, and so you cannot take advice from your young brothers and sisters about that. So, and the whole tribe just about showed up for the concert. We spoke that, my wife and I, the Hopi elders reiterated it, Leonard Pelcher's people, the band sang it, and what we did is we went back there and we brought the power back to the tribe, because for them, they've been told you're uneducated, you're unsophisticated, you don't know how to do this, just sign on the dotted line and stop talking about it. That's
mm-hmm.
kind of the way they've been dealt with. We went down there and said, no, you know, you are the mature wisdom keepers of this area. And you know what you're here to do, and you're perfectly situated to do it. You cannot leave. When they leave, they can't deal with checkbooks and Walmarts and traffic. They've been raised in a remote, one of the most beautiful places in the world, but very remote, so they can't deal with the pace of the outside world. We said, it's perfect. This is what Jah wanted you to have nowhere else to go. So we just did that in the Grand Canyon. Now, what we're getting ready to do in Jamaica, I'll be going down there as soon as the power's back on, which should be any day now. What we're getting ready to do in Jamaica is do another tour with the reggae artist of the inner city schools. And what we'll do is we'll go into the inner city schools in Kingston and into Spanish Town. And the message for the kids is, you know, you're bigger than what you see in your environment. God has sent you to share love with every human being. You can do that poor or rich, black or white, in the ghettos of Jamaica or in the hills of Mobay, you know, or in New York City.
Go ahead. Robert, this key thing that is forgiving, though, that's one I want you to expound on, is, you know, the forgiving part, because that's the toughest part, I think. And
absolutely.
I call it compassionate communication, how we have to deal with people. And that's the only way to communicate is have compassion. Can you expound a little on it?
Yeah, forgiveness is the key. And let me just tell you what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness doesn't mean you let someone continue to exploit you. Forgiveness doesn't mean you stay in a relationship that you don't feel good with. Forgiveness doesn't mean you don't sue for reparations. Doesn't mean you don't quit a job. Forgiveness can take any form. It's the content, and that is that you're aware that one of your brothers or sisters forgot who they were and treated you in what seems like an attacking fashion. and that they forgot who they were, and that's what they did, just like you and I will forget who we are and do that ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness is the awareness that a brother or sister seemed to attack you. So a lot of people won't forgive because they think, well, if I forgive, I have to go back in that relationship, or if I forgive, they'll continue to exploit me. You know, what Mandela and Tutu and Martin Luther King and Gandhi showed was you can stand up for your rights, you can tell an oppressor you're not going to continue to do this, but you can do it with love and forgiveness. A wonderful statement Martin Luther King made the night before he died, which I think says it all. Here was a guy who had been threatened countless times, and he said that night in Birmingham, but the night before he died, he said, you know, the plane was late, and the pilot came on and said, we have Dr. King with us, and because of that, we've checked for bombs two or three times, so we're leaving a little late. He said, it was late because some of my sick white brothers wanted to kill me. Some, he knew it wasn't all. Sick, he knew they were sick and not evil. Brothers, he knew they were still brothers. So it's being able to stand up for your rights in different situations without anger and bitterness, going beyond the anger. We all know the anger. Believe me, we all know the anger.
I've been there.
I've been there with people that hurt me, and I've been there every time I look at certain politicians on TV. I won't mention any names because we probably have everybody listened to, but whoever, everyone knows the anger when you see the unconscious behavior. We have to get beyond that anger into a healing mode. So what forgiveness means is that you, actually at the highest level, Ross Charles, there's a forgiveness to destroy. If you say you hurt me, say you said some bad things behind my back,
mm-hmm.
and I went and I said, you know, Ross Charles, I heard you said these things, but you know, I'm going to forgive you, even though you should never have done it, I'm going to forgive you. Me being the bigger of the two, the better of the two, will forgive you for the sin that you did. Now, that makes you feel more shame. Right?
Indeed.
Makes you feel, that's forgiving to destroy. I'm actually still attacking you by saying I'm forgiving. But if I say to you, my brother, you forgot who you were, and in the process you lashed out at me, it's okay, I've done it, everyone's going to do it, I know it's not who you really are, I know it's not what you meant. And to me, it was a looking for love in a convoluted form.
You're giving an I message, you know, and
yes.
That's important, is when you do this, I feel. You know, basically that's it. And I say that is a form of compassionate communication. You know,
exactly. That's a great term for it. And you know, Martin Luther King made a great statement at his Nobel Prize. He said, "We human beings must learn to go past revenge and retaliation." He says the basis of such a system is love and forgiveness. You know, so if we, it's understandable why we are all angry and outraged at things that have happened to us personally, it happened to us as a race. You're African American, I'm Jewish, my wife's Irish. All of us could go back in history and find something to be outraged about.
We can we can be outraged today. We don't even have to go back in history.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know that more than I would know that, because the prejudice towards African Americans is much stronger today in this country than it is towards Jews.
Oh, is it so? But Robert, you hear people say, "What are we still complaining about?" You know.
Well, yeah, those are the ones who just want to stay in denial. But you know, in order for this planet to move and us to move as individuals, we have to go beyond the anger, which is the most difficult thing on this planet to do. It's the second most difficult thing. The most difficult thing in the world to do, second most difficult thing, is to forgive. The most difficult thing in the world to do is to not forgive.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Think about it.
Mm.
The most difficult thing, and that's why people's lives are a mess. That's why the planet offers a mess. So the second most difficult thing is to forgive. The most difficult is to not forgive. Then you relive it over and over. You lose your peace of mind. You forget why you're on the planet to love. You know, you eat away at your body. You eat away at your spirit. You become, you know, that whole thing that we all have experienced when we're in that state.
And I was just talking about the forms of reggae music, and I played Luciano, the title track, Serious Times, and I don't play the kind of reggae that promotes lewdness and negativity, and you know, and I don't think the Lucianos are and the Mikey Generals and the Abijahs are as exposed as they should be. You know, I mean, if you look at MTV, I don't look at it too often, but, you know, the artists that I do see on there, they give out a lot of negative messages. And for instance, the brother Sizzla had a problem getting into Montreal, and he had to sign a waiver. And I think we talked about it the other day about the gay bashing and the reason. Can you expound on that a little? The reason that you think that it's so prevalent in Jamaica, the gay bashing.
Well, I think whenever you've had a society that through its history and through its present exploitation has destroyed the family structure and especially disempowered the men of that culture, you have a greater homophobic culture. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, Jamaica poverty in and of itself destroys the family and destroys the man's ability to be a provider. And that causes tremendous shame within most men. You know, and the history of slavery. Remember, 96% of Jamaica's slave descendant. I mean, everyone in Jamaica, just about, when they think of their heritage, stops at an image of a slave ship with the people stacked like cordwood. You know, my images go back to some village in Russia. My wife's image goes back to some village in Ireland. But in Jamaica, it stops. And I think that's a wound that hasn't been healed. And so what's happened is the crab pot effect. The crab pot effect is attack each other. Anyone who tries to pull out, attack them. But it goes deeper than that. So first of all, you have a male population that's very poor, unable to take care of their families. Only like under 10% of Jamaican children are raised in a nuclear family. Dig this, 50% of the birth certificates don't list a father.
Wow, 50%.
So you have, it's just, you know, astounding. If you're in Jamaica, it's rare to meet anyone that's where the father's even doing much for the kids. They're being raised by grannies and aunties, and the women of Jamaica are really raising the children there. So I think when you have this problem with the males of Jamaica, you have a more homophobic situation.
It kind of makes sense.
Now, there's something else that you need to know. There's the Willie Lynch syndrome. And as poet Cherry Natural, Jamaican poet Cherry Natural, says, we're Willie Lynching each other. Willie Lynch, you know, the term Lynch comes from Willie Lynch. Willie Lynch was a great baka master. He was a plantation overseer in the 1700s. And he overseed hundreds of slaves with minimal people. He was so good at it, the American plantation owners would pay for him to come up to the U.S. to give seminars, you know, in Charleston and Savannah and New Orleans, is how do you control your slaves so well? Now, this is back in 1700s, when, like, he flew them up to the Marriott, but if it was today, they would. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they'd sail him up, pay him a lot of money, and here's what he said. He said, there's only one thing you need to know to control a slave. And I like to call them enslaved people, because they're not slaves. Slaves is an image that they're almost like we're meant to be slaves.
Right.
They're enslaved people, because that tells you who did it. They were enslaved by somebody else. Anyway, what he said, and this is key, he said this will last for 300 years. He said pit them against each other, dark against light, tall against short, old against young, male against female. In every way you can, pit them against each other. And that will last for 300 years. And that's what's happened in Jamaica. They have been pitted against each other. They attack each other. You know, and I think part of that is the reason why you have some of this murder music coming out. And he said that in 1712. It's now almost 300 years. It's time for that to end.
Well, you know, I kind of saw some of that when the times that I've gone to Jamaica is certain people that in certain jobs were a certain color. And it seemed that to me that, you know, Jamaicans describe it as black or black. You don't see those people in the, like, working in the banks. You see brown to light-skinned people. And, you know, I just kind of thought to myself, I said, wow, I wonder if apartheid is something like this, you know, it's like how they divide the people by color. And, you know, that happens right here in this country, you know. And I think it is a global self-hatred among African peoples. You know, it's not just Jamaica or America. I think it's globally, you know.
Well, it is. And it's funny, I got a letter the day before yesterday from a prisoner who read one of our books, and he addressed that. He said, how how do I, as a black man, stop the self-hatred that we've been taught to feel? You know, and my answer to him, which is never complete enough as I like, but one is to know that everybody has that feeling. Everybody, if people love themselves, they love each other, and this world wouldn't be in this situation. How many people do we know of any color that you can truly say when you experience them, you experience them as an unconditionally loving person? Everyone is in their own personal struggle with Babylon. Everybody. Babylon is a system of separation that makes us separate from each other and from Jah. So everyone is struggling in their own personal struggle with Babylon within their soul, and everyone is struggling with their own feelings of self-hatred. And the way out of that is to realize that beyond all that, we are fully enlightened beings. No matter what we've done, no matter what was done to us, we can claim our position to teach and learn love, which is why we're here. We are, each and every one of us, not becoming enlightened, struggling. We are fully enlightened beings who just have not remembered it yet. So I think it's been much tougher for the black community, because when you were dominated by the powers to be for so many hundreds of years, that and harvested almost as slaves, you know, they all divided up Africa, that leaves a marked impression that doesn't go away that quickly. And then when you experience even the present day prejudice, you know it. You go out every day. I bet every day you see acts of prejudice because of the color of your skin.
You know, well, I had somebody tell me I talk about race too much, you know, and then when I would say something about, wow, white people doing the things that they do, and they'd say, well, I am white, so, you know, and somebody says that to me, it's like, wow, I can't say anything, how I feel, what it is. This is my experiences. That's why I often say that black people know white people better than white people know black people.
Absolutely. I remember one time I was in Atlanta and I was having lunch with some people, and one was a black man in a beautiful suit. He was the head of the IRS division in the Atlanta area. He was a friend of mine who just happened to be at dinner, and we were talking about race. And my friend was saying that he didn't think it was so bad in Atlanta. And he said, this man who was a dignified-looking guy in a beautiful suit said, watch this. And he gets up and he walks across the restaurant where three elderly women are waiting to be seated. And as he approaches them, two of the three women grab their purses and hold them close to him.
Oh, my God.
Now, this is, Rashad, this is like a 45, 50-year-old dignified-looking guy in a suit and tie walking across a nice restaurant in Atlanta. And that was the response.
Well, you know, we know many of instances of that kind of stuff, you know, Raskai. And I mean, it's just amazing how people are conditioned, though. People are conditioned by the medias, by, you know, it's just like a continuum. Because what I really believe is that power concedes nothing, and things change to remain the same. And so, you know, and the fundamental things that's happening in this country today is master and slave still. You know, I mean, they haven't really changed. And you see a few middle-class African-Americans, and we say, ah, look, there's change. But if we really look at it, look at the masses. Is there really a change?
Well, is there, but here's what will change. Let me tell you another great story. I have a friend here in Asheville named Burhane. Burhane is a wonderful reggae singer, 35 years old, beautiful guy, long dread, black skin, marries a white girl, and she says, let's go visit my father. So she calls her dad and said, me and my husband want to come visit you. Doesn't tell the father that he's black and dread.
Mm-hmm.
So they show up in somewhere in Tennessee at the guy's place. They're walking out of the car, and the father comes out on the balcony and sees Burhane, and he just stops them both, and he says, look, I just can't deal with this. I'm prejudiced. I've always been prejudiced. You didn't tell me this. I can't deal with this. I don't want you to come in my house. Turns around and walks away. And as he's walking away, Burhane says, who's a very loving guy, Burhane says, hey, man, that's cool. I understand where you're coming from. It's cool. Didn't resist it, just gave the guy love.
Mm-hmm.
And Burhane was, though Amy was very upset about this, Burhane wasn't. So 6 months later, I see them, and they tell me this wonderful story. She said about 3 months later, his wife died, who I guess was Amy's stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
He's devastated. He calls Amy with tears and said, I felt such shame for having done that and turned you away like that, and that I thought so long about the way Burheim handled that, and didn't make me wrong for it or anything. It made me even more shameful, and I want to tell you that you and him are always welcome in my home. The only thing that makes an enemy or friend is love. The only way out is love. The only way, even though we feel the anger and we love to strike back and we love to, you know, just go in there and just yell and scream at people, the only way out of this is to get beyond that and into the love. And it's the love that will change the people, and they have changed. They haven't changed as much as me and you, but you got to remember, 230 years ago, no human being lived free. Everyone lived under a warlord or a king. When they said, let's make a democracy, people say, oh, people can't rule themselves. They don't have the intelligence. No one's ever ruled themselves. Even back in the democracies of Athens and Rome, it was only democracy for the upper crust. And now almost half the world lives in democracy. When 130 years ago, they said no more slavery, people said there's been slavery for biblical times. There'll always be slaveries. It was meant to be. Now there's no more slavery. When people said that women should vote, women don't have the innate intelligence to make political decisions. When people said blacks should be able to eat in restaurants and go to motels and same schools, people said there's always been segregation and there always will be. So the human consciousness is progressing towards greater levels of awareness. You know what I mean? It is happening. And now those things we look back on as ridiculous. What could we have been thinking when we made those kind of decisions way back then? There will come a time when there will be no or at least a very small amount of prejudice, when societies will begin to heal themselves with love and forgiveness. And just as naive as that may sound now, remember how naive these other people made these other events sound. I mean, when Gandhi and Mandela and King said, we can get the oppressor to stop without a bloodbath, we can do it nonviolently, people said, you're ridiculous. That's naive. No oppressor's ever left without attacking them. And they're not going to leave unless you attack them. And Mandela said, no, there's a higher way. And sure enough, apartheid was dismantled without a bloodbath. And then even after that, the Reconciliation and Truth Commission settled scores without vengeance. So there we are moving as a world. It's not covered by the TV, but we are moving as a world towards higher levels of consciousness historically. And that's why we're going down to Jamaica. We're doing something very unique on our next school tour. On October 21st, we're having a very large concert at the beautiful Pegasus Hotel in downtown Kingston, and it's called The Healing of the Nation, Big Up Our Leaders. And through 14 key supporters in Jamaica that support what we're doing, like the tourist minister, like Robert Russell from Reggae Sunfest, like Bobby Stevens, the head of the Port Authority, Aluna Samba, these well-known Jamaicans, we're inviting all of Jamaica's leadership.
Prime Minister also?
Who?
Prime Minister, Mr. Patterson?
We invited the Prime Minister, we're inviting the opposition leader, we're inviting church leaders, civic leaders, all to this big free event at the Pegasus Hotel, hors d'oeuvres, the whole thing, reggae artists appearing, and we're going to ask them to do one thing. We're going to ask the leadership of Jamaica to join us in healing the island with one love. Now, we're telling them, we don't expect you to become Mother Teresa's and give away all your possessions and serve the poor. We're only asking that you show a demonstrable gesture of love to your people, that you love them. Because as leaders, everything you do has a huge impact. In whatever way you're guided to do it, we're not even going to make a suggestion. So if you're a political leader or a civic leader or a business leader, show the people of Jamaica that you love them in whatever way you're guided. Because when you decide to love other humans, you do Jah's work, and Jah will guide you. God will guide you on his own. We don't have to tell them what to do. They'll get their own guidance. And what we're going to explain to them is, if the captain of a ship moves the wheel a little bit, by the time you get across the ocean, you're on a whole other course.
How much publicity is this going to get?
Lots.
Okay. Yeah, I would you let people know about how they can get your books to the website?
They can go to rastaheart.com, www.rastaheart.com, and click on books, and they can order our books at like half price there, $7.50, I think it is. You know, so and if you know anyone in prison and you go to that site and email us their address in prison, we'll send them a free book. We've got a lot of prisoners get healed because they had a lot of time to read. So if you have anyone that's in prison that you think would be valued by the books that we do, and remember, the people that speak through our books are mostly black poor people or came from that. I mean, Luciano speaks through our book, Tony Rebel, Abby Jah, you know, Denroy Morgan of Morgan Heritage. All these people are featured in our books, and they have a big impact on other people in jail. So if you'll email me, and you go to rosterheart.com, you can find our email address. If you email me any prisoner's address, I will send them a free book, and you can order books right there under books.
I want to say this has been a pretty good conversation that we've had. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. Hope your listeners did.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And we want to really get into some of these artists, you know, that we're talking about. I'm going to try to find some Morgan Heritage and some Abby Jah and Luciano. And what about Tony Rebel? Was he involved in that, too?
Tony's been around the periphery. He actually tried to make it to our last concert and didn't get there in time because he was performing at the Marley Museum that night. But Tony's a real strong One Love presence, and he's a real healer in Jamaica. He's done tremendous things for the youth of Jamaica. So what I would tell you is all of these artists that are singing about it, you know, Justin Hines and Joseph Hill and, you know, all these Peter Broggs, if you know him, all these One Love artists, they're living it. They're over there. When we ask them to go on tour and we pay nothing, everything is donated, they always come and donate their time and energy to our tours and our gatherings. So these people that are singing about it are living it, and because they feel they have a covenant with the Creator to bring this healing through their music, they feel like it's part of prophecy, that when a conscious reggae artist like the Lucianos and the Mikey Generals and the Abby Jahs and these people, they believe that Jah has sent them to this planet to bring a healing tone. Like Denroy Morgan told me, he said, our music carries the same healing vibration that David's harp carried in biblical times. So they believe themselves to have done that, and they are. I mean, everyone, you know yourself, as you start to play this music in a few minutes, you know that music goes out and heals people's hearts. They know it. And it's most of it is coming from Jamaica, from the Rasta community. So this particular musical tone of One Love has birthed out of Jamaica and out of the Rasta community. So we tell the leaders, if you could have birthed the message of One Love through your music, you could be the first society to start to heal through music and through One Love. And that's why the Jamaican government has met with Sizzler, with Capleton, with Bounty Killer, with Elephant Man, with Beanie Man. They met with them 2 weeks ago, and all of them agreed they need to tone this thing down.
Oh yeah, really? I mean, because they're, and even if it means just for their own careers, because you can't keep going around spreading hate and think that people are gonna want to see you.
No, and what's happened is MTV Awards canceled Beanie Man's presentation. Last week, the Music of Black Black Music Organization that was doing their awards in London canceled a number of the DJs who were playing that kind of music from coming. I think they canceled Beanie Man, and I think it was Elephant Man. So they're seeing that start to happen. But what's happened in Jamaica, and, you know, Jamaican murder rate has skyrocketed.
Oh, I know.
What's happened is Jamaica, more than any other country, Ross Charles, is moved by their music. I mean, the Jamaicans are such musical people.
Oh, I know. I know.
I mean, you know, you've been there. And that's why this music comes out of Jamaica. But it's also why the music can lead them astray. And they're not a literate society, particularly. They don't read a lot. A lot of people, half the population is illiterate. So the music carries the message. If you start telling people that revenge and retaliation is appropriate, you're going to, as a singer, we're inviting Sizzler and Capleton to this thing that we're doing. All these artists, we're inviting them to come and listen to us on that leadership thing because they're more leaders than the politicians.
Serious.
And if they can start to tone down that message and bring our message to them is, look, if you're not bringing Jah's children back to him, you're leading them astray. And if you're not bringing people to love, you're leading people astray. You were sent here to bring people back to God. you know, do that through your music. Do that like Luciano and Abby John, Mikey General do, and bring John's children home to him.
Well, we're going to be getting to the music, and I want to thank you very much for your input, your enlightenment, and when is it that you're going to be going to Jamaica? October?
Our tour is October 18th through the 22nd, so maybe after that I can let you know how things went. We can maybe do another show and I can tell you how things went in Jamaica.
I would love that, and I think the listeners would love that.
All right. Also, if anybody wants to be in our email list where we get updates of what we're doing, again, just go to rastaheart.com, sign up on our join email list, and then every month we send you a full email with pictures and everything of what happened and what we're getting ready to do, of the Havasupai Village, of the leadership thing in Jamaica. You'll get a full picture email about once a month from us.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, Raskine, Robert Raskine, and we want to thank him. And God bless, love, guide, and protect.
Yes, God bless. Thank you. One love, Ross Charles.
Every time.
Take care, my brother.
Thank you.